The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Don't count Steve Bannon out. And here's why. Do you remember the days when talks of amnesty torpedoed Marco Rubio? When low energy Jeb was destroyed by candidate Trump because he referred to illegal immigration and DACA as an act of love. Well, those days were so 5 minutes ago. Yesterday, in a rare glimpse in a meeting between the president and lawmakers, President Trump said DACA, quote, should be a bill of love. This made Jeb Bush happy. Jeb was tweeting yesterday saying it's good to see him finally being reasonable. Getting a fly on the wall view into these meetings isn't really normal, so you have to wonder, why were the cameras rolling yesterday? Was it a mistake, or was there something else going on here? Here's what I believe. The news of the day was dominated by Michael Wolff's book and questions over Trump's mental stability. Anybody see any mental unstable president in that meeting? Because I didn't. He was uncharacteristically prepared, reserved, attentive, engaged. And he was also very left. Some have criticized the president's willingness and ability to reach across the aisle and compromise. Boy, that wasn't the case yesterday. It was actually hard to determine whether Trump favored the Democrats at the table or the Republicans. When Feinstein posed the question about the president's willingness to do a, quote, clean DACA bill now and security for the border later, Trump went into full agreeable mode. It took the House Majority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, to remind President Trump that Feinstein didn't mention the wall or border security. Now, he eventually made his intentions a little more clear, but it all kind of seemed like an afterthought for him. In fact, he said at one point, you go ahead and put it all together, and I don't care what it is, I'll sign it. He seemed to want to hurry everything along. Didn't matter, he said, quote, whether I like or agree with it, I will sign anything you put in front of me. That's not a leader. There's no leadership there. But it seems like the leader had an ulterior purpose or motive. For those that are pissed off on Twitter that Trump is considering DACA, you might as well get used to it. Trump knows it as well as everybody in the House and the Senate. Without DACA, Trump and the Republicans have zero leverage to do anything with border security and immigration reform. However, the master negotiator just gave them DACA yesterday. DACA isn't going anywhere. In fact, this thing almost seemed planned out before it even started. So why keep rolling? Why? The real work on immigration has already happened, and it's going to be finalized during a closed-door session. But Trump, the Democrats, and the Republicans wanted their constituents to know something. Feinstein wanted to project the appearance that DACA was their primary motivation. McCarthy wanted Republicans to know that border security and immigration reform is a higher priority than anything like amnesty. And Trump, he wanted to show everybody that he was mentally stable. Kushner, Ivanka coached him. This is their influence. Because he is more than willing to reach across the aisle and cooperate. He even suggested they bring back earmarks. Quite honestly, after seeing it yesterday, you should rename Pennsylvania Avenue. And it should be renamed Broadway, because that theater was very good yesterday.
It's Wednesday, January 10th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm not really sure, though, it was better than Cats. What did you think, Stu?
No, Cats was definitely superior. No, it was actually pretty interesting to watch, I thought.
It was horrifying to watch.
Was it?
It was horrifying to watch.
But that's what everyone says Trump is like behind closed doors. You hear that all the time. He's a guy who's just affable and people like him and he kind of goes along with what people say. And you know, it's different than his sort of public speeches. And that is how he appeared yesterday. I mean, he basically said, look, I'm not concerned about what you guys come up with. He said, I believe my position is whatever you guys come up with. So, I mean, that's a...
Holy cow.
He doesn't...
That's not what anybody elected. That's not what anybody elected. You did not elect somebody to say, to Congress, I'll sign whatever you guys... He said yesterday, quote, I trust you guys. Well, the American people don't trust Congress. But we'll get into that later. There was something that broke this morning at 5 o'clock that really concerned me, that the Asian markets began to sell a lot of American stock and started getting out of anything American around 5 a.m. This was caused by China. China announced that they're thinking about getting out of U.S. treasuries. Now, remember, they'll never do that because they need us so much. And they're thinking about either slowing down on their buying or stopping the buying of U.S. treasuries. That's the first step. The next step is selling the U.S. treasuries. There's nobody that can afford to buy all of our treasuries that we need except for China or our own central bank. This is not going to be good if this indeed happens. I wanted to get Chris Martinson on. He is the co-founder and CEO of Peak Prosperity, and find out what he thinks, if I'm misreading this, if I am jumping to conclusions, that this is really not a good thing. Chris, welcome to the program.
Glenn, it's a real pleasure to be back with you today.
Thanks. So am I reading this right?
Well, you absolutely are. This comes at a very critical moment for the long-dated U.S. Treasury market, the 10- and 30-year market out there, because they've been bumping up against, yields have been bumping up against a trend line that's been in place for 30 years. We've had yields going down, and they were right up against the upper channel. They were ready to pop into territory that would bring out the bond bears, those things that are so scary to everybody in power. Because once you start getting a sell-off in long-dated U.S. paper, who knows, it ties to everything, Glenn. It just goes everywhere. So China comes out and says exactly what you said. Hey, we're thinking of slowing or stopping buying of treasuries. And that's on top of the most recent U.S. tax plan, which is going to cause us to issue a bunch more treasuries in the near future. So all of a sudden, the treasury market wakes up and says, hey, looks like there's more supply than we thought. We're going to have to sell some of these things. And indeed, we saw a very interesting move this morning in interest rates. We're going to have to watch it carefully because, you know, my view, Glenn, we're in the everything bubble. Everything's in a bubble.
Yeah.
Those are always just in search of a pin. Is this the pin? I don't know.
Okay. So Chris, let me, because I've just issued a bunch of my, you know, forecasting or predictions for 2018, and some of them are kind of far out there. But the one that I am looking at for the market, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this. I believe that if the bond market begins to melt down, and I'm not an expert, so you are, so help me out. The bond market begins to melt down like this. You take your money out of bonds, you're going to put it someplace. The markets are going up. The stock market is going up. Historically speaking, before any huge bubble breaks, you'll have a time of euphoria, a 12 to 24 month period of euphoria, where the stock market kind of feels like Bitcoin felt in November, a melt up. I believe that we are at the beginning of a melt up, that this rise to 25,000 is the beginning of a melt up, and it's going to suck a lot of money into the stock market. Do you think that's possible, probable?
It's possible, and I'm going to back off on probable because of one thing. the piece that's really come into both the stock market and the bond market is the amount of leverage that's in there right now. So leverage means people are borrowing. You know, all these hedge funds out there, they're trying to earn their 2 and 20, these exorbitant fees. What do? People want the safety of bonds, and they're getting 2% off of them. What do? Well, what you do is you borrow four times the amount of money you actually have, and now you're suddenly getting 8% because 4 times 2 is 8. So they're borrowed a lot of money, and in the bond market, there's extraordinarily low liquidity, meaning it's I've watched trades sit on the tape for hours, sometimes days, when they used to sell in minutes. And so there's not a lot of liquidity, and there's a lot of leverage. You put those two L's together, and what you find out is that when bonds start to sell off, they actually vacuum money from other parts of the market, because you have to pay for the loss. Yeah.
Got it.
And the stock market as well has the highest amount of margin debt, which is a form of leverage, that's ever been seen on record, higher than we saw in 2000, higher than 2007. So there's a lot of leverage out there. And this is the concern a lot of traders have, is that once you get an unwind started, how fast does it go? Where does it go? How do all the threads connect? It's like with Lehman, you don't really know until it happens just how many of those threads were interconnected. That's the state of our market. I know it's very complex. I didn't mean to over.
So that's all right, Chris. So help me out on this. Last week, the president of China went out in front of all of his forces, and he said, "Prepare for war." Mm-hmm. And it was kind of shocking language from him. But it didn't seem like they were being aggressive as much as, you know, hey, the world's changing and we have to prepare for war. Is it possible that this is some sort of bluff with them? Or do you believe they are really, truly considering getting out of our treasuries?
Well, the most important report that was ever released came out in June of last year, 2017, and it was released by the Beijing Petroleum University. And the report said, hey, we've studied it intensively. China is going to experience a peak in oil output in 2018. That's from conventional, unconventional, all their shale. They looked at everything and said, that's it. And they looked at their own rising demand and said, oh, my goodness, we are going to have to import twice as much oil as we currently are within the next 12 years. It puts them really at crossroads with the United States, who's mm-hmm. also still a large importer, and with a lot of Europe. And we saw Saudi Arabia travel to Beijing shortly after that report was released, and they struck a bunch of deals. There's a huge realignment going on around this. Everything you hear about the United States military and the South China Sea, those Spratly Islands, the sandbars that the Chinese are building, those are there because there are oil and gas reserves in the South China Sea that they want. That's the nature of this game that we have to look at, because China is full to the gills in their leadership with very serious people who've got great credentials, a lot of scientists, a lot of engineers, doctors, lawyers, you know, very few lawyers. And they understand that this next part of the game is going to be all about the Middle East. It's very much about resources. And that's where I think the war talk comes from.
When people talk about bonds, to break it down for the average person, the United States is basically selling its debt, and those time out. And so you can buy a 1 year or a 10 year or a 30 year treasury, and it times out. Aren't there a lot of big bonds that are now up that we have to refinance?
There's a lot of that going on, and it's across the whole bond universe. Remember, you know, the United States government issues debt, so do corporations. Households are in debt. So you look at student loans, auto loans, subprime auto loans, mortgages, corporations making debt, AAA rated corporations, junk rated. We've never seen this much debt either in the United States or the world. So from 2007, this whole recovery has really been based on a lot of printing, and the whole world's done it. And so the thing that scares me the most is that, again, we're looking for a pin. It could be Europe. You know, right now, here's the craziest statistic I know. This is how badly central banks have messed everything up. Right now, 2-year treasury paper from the United States government has a higher yield than 2-year Greek debt. That means somehow people are supposed to, be valuing Greeks as being more creditworthy than the United States right now. That's nuts. That's not reality. That's how badly distorted everything is. When things are that badly distorted, you have to be worried about what happens when reality comes back and people begin to value everything in what I think in a more fair, more realistic way. You're going to see some sell-offs that are going to be really painful.
Chris Martinson, thank you so much.
Chris Martinson is the co-founder and CEO of Peak Prosperity. You can get his website at peakprosperity.com.
Glenn Beck.
I have to disagree with Chris on one thing, and that is on this meltdown or melt up. And it could be just my wishful thinking, but I don't think so. Usually I am the guy who's like, it's all going to crash today. Get out, everybody, save your lives. There's not enough light bulbs on the ship. This time I've changed my opinion because I've done some research on history. And, you know, everybody knew, anybody who was smart in 1928, you knew a crash was coming. You knew this isn't real. The whole thing is just not real. And yet over 18 or 24 months, beginning in 1928, the stock market just went through the roof and it sucked up everybody's cash. I believe there's going to come a period here soon where it will begin to feel, the stock market will begin to feel like Bitcoin did. When that feeling is going on, run for your life. I feel, and now China not buying bonds, that might change things. I don't know. But I just think that people are going to start pouring their money into the stock market, and it's going to, it will break everybody in the end. It's not real now. There's no reason for the stock market to go up. Well, that President Trump is... No, they priced that in at the election. They priced that in. And so I just feel that the next 24 months, you're going to see a melt up within the next 24 months. I think we're in it now. I think this 20 to 25,000 on the Dow is the beginning of it. And it's a kind of feel like, you know how you talk to people about, you know, the end times, and they're like, and once this happens, it's 7 years. You can count on it. It's 7 years. I kind of feel that way about the melt up. I think we could see the stock market go as high as 50. I think in my forecast for 2018, I said I think that the Dow will be at 30,000. But I think it could go a lot higher than that. And it's going to be exuberant. You'll make money for a very short period of time. Then hold on to your pants, because you'll be selling your pants shortly thereafter. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So, yesterday, I had the sound off, and I was watching the press conference for a few minutes, and I thought to myself, boy, he really looks presidential here. He looks in control. This is really good. Oh, he's talking about DACA, and he's talking about the border. Turn it up. Then I started listening to the president, and I did not recognize him. He suddenly yesterday became the guy I've been expecting the whole time. I want you to listen to what he said about comprehensive immigration reform. Listen.
My positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And my what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them.
I'm trying to remember the time that anybody who voted for the president said, I want you to go to Washington and trust the members of Congress on both sides. I don't remember a single voter saying on either side, we trust Congress. We believe the members of Congress will do the right thing. I certainly don't remember anyone on the right saying, even if the members of Congress on immigration, on comprehensive immigration reform, if they come to you, Mr. President, and you don't like it, I want you to trust them over us. I don't recall that. Now, here's the question. Donald Trump said at one point he could walk out on Fifth Avenue and shoot someone, and his supporters will not say a word. Well, he didn't shoot somebody. He shot you. When you have Fox News turning on President Trump over this yesterday, that's saying something. He went and he shot you. He said, I'll take the heat for it. Well, who is he going to get heat from? You. You have been arguing. You have been defending. You have said this is the number one thing that you want. He won on immigration. And now I'll give you DACA without anything. We got to get that done first. Let's get DACA. When was that? Because I remember everybody saying they were against DACA 100%.
It was the litmus test of whether you were an amnesty guy or not.
Right. You are for DACA, you're out. Now, some people, I believe, said, okay, I'm not for DACA, and I don't want DACA, but if that's the chip we have to put down on the table to get the fence and everything else done, well, you get that done first, and then we'll talk about it. Now, if I would have said that, which I did, if I would have said that during the election, you'd hang me, which you did. You're a sellout. What's wrong with you? They'll never come through with that. They'll never do it. Well, wait a minute. I said, let's get security first. Yeah, but they'll never do it. And those people don't. Okay, all right. He yesterday sat at the table. Do you have him saying about DACA? Do we have that audio?
We have a bunch of clips on that, but I don't know which one you're talking
about.
I'm
talking about the one where he said, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that first.
Yeah, he did kind of back off of that after the meeting and say, oh, well, we got to have a wall. He did later on, you know, they tried to clarify that through. I mean, it was clear a couple of times that he wasn't exactly sure of the lines of debate where he would say, you know, I think it was Feinstein who said, hey, we want a clean DACA bill.
She said, what would you say? We have people who are suffering. What would you say if we could just get DACA done now and then we come back to the border and the wall and the security? But we really need to get this done first. He said, I'm totally fine with that. I agree with you. And she said, wait a minute. You agree we could do that? Yes, we should do DACA first. But then we need to do, you know, the border. That's what Tucker Carlson's whole monologue yesterday, which was shocking. His whole monologue was on, wait a minute, that's the only chip you have.
Right. And then later on, he backed off on that. Their claim was basically like he didn't understand what the term clean bill meant.
I mean, then he should not be president of the United States. We are in the middle of the most important negotiation of what people voted for. This is what he ran on. You don't understand clean bill?
Well,
you've been president for a year now.
Their answer was his clean bill is a trade between security and DACA when we all know that that's not, I mean, usually what they mean by clean bill, this is very common parlance of Washington, which is the one thing we're talking about. Let's just get that done and not put anything else to complicate it. So, right. So that was what Feinstein was asking about. And, you know, Trump said yes to it, but then did later on back off.
So what did he, what was the excuse for earmarks? Listen to this on what he said about earmarks.
Our system lends itself to not getting things done. And I hear so much about earmarks, the old earmark system, how there was a great friendliness when you had earmarks. But of course, they had other problems with earmarks. But maybe all of you should start thinking about going back to a form of earmarks, because this system,
Listen to this. He was not happy when they laughed at him, by the way. He was not pleased.
And I'm there with you, because this system really lends itself to not getting along. It lends itself to hostility and anger, and they hate the Republicans and they hate the Democrats. And, you know, in the old days of earmarks, you can say what you want about certain presidents and others, where they all talk about they went out to dinner at night and they all got along and they passed bills. That was an earmark system. And maybe we should think about it, and we have to put better controls because it got a little bit
stop.
Out of hand.
So here's the guy who said, I'm going to clean out the swamp because everybody's doing deals. And we said, he's the deal maker. He's the guy who's been paying both sides, mainly Democrats, because he lived in New York. He pays them off to get done what he wants to get done. He's going to clean up the swamp. Aren't we against earmarks, or are we for earmarks now?
Yeah, and the reason why those deals were done at meetings when you could trade earmarks was politicians taking taxpayer dollars and paying each other off with them.
Yes.
So that's how those deals got done. That's not
that's
a good
bribery.
Thing.
Bribery.
That's the swamp. That is exactly the swamp. That's a fascinating one. And let's look at this. This is Trump yesterday talking about the immigration bill again and talking about how it's a bill of love.
But I feel having the Democrats in with us is absolutely vital, because this should be a bipartisan bill. This should be a bill of love. Truly, it should be a bill of love, and we can do that. But it also has to be a bill where we're able to secure our border. Drugs are pouring into our country at a record pace. A lot of people are coming in that we can't have. We've greatly stiffened, as you know, and fewer people are trying to come in. But we have tremendous numbers of people and drugs pouring into our country. So in order to secure it, we need a wall. We need closing enforcement. We have to close enforcement loopholes.
And then so remember Bill of Love, then remember Jeb Bush from 2014.
Yes, they broke the law, but it's not a felony. It's kind of the it's an act of love.
Remember that?
That was one of the things that sunk Jeb Bush's campaign. And again, we did a show, Glenn, if you remember back, I don't know, it was like maybe sometime in 2016, where we had people who were Trump supporters call up and say, what's the one thing that would shake you from this guy? Now, I think we've talked about a lot of good things Trump has accomplished in the first year, and there's a list of them. But the one thing that was the overwhelming majority of people who called was if he starts flaking out on the border. I mean, these things are... I don't remember Jeb Bush ever saying he wanted to also bring back the earmark system to get it done. I mean, he's going further than any of that stuff. Marco Rubio wasn't saying this stuff. And he said comprehensive immigration reform, which is the thing that sunk Bush. George W. Bush, Rubio, Lindsey Graham, all
Ted
those
Cruz.
People.
He said that Ted Cruz was part of the immigration comprehensive, which he wasn't.
Which he wasn't. But
right.
Still, that was the accusation.
Yes.
Against Cruz, that one of the things that hammered him in a campaign about. And here he is doing the exact same stuff. I mean, this is what I expected. So this does not shake me at all.
Nope.
I mean, honestly,
nope.
Still, as a guy who was not a big Trump supporter coming into this, I'm still, he's outdoing my expectations.
Yeah.
So
this
I'm
is the guy I expected.
But this is exactly the stuff that I was worried about. And many people in the audience that were Trump supporters were worried about. Does this shake you, or do you just take it? And because I think you can fairly look at this and take the totality of it and say, okay, yeah, it's been okay.
I want to hear from you, because this is what we asked. We did a show on it, a whole show. I just want to hear, what will it take? And universal immigration. If he gets shaky on immigration and the border, DACA, all of that, that was the thing. Are you still there? And does it matter? I will tell you, you're seeing a new Donald Trump, and I think you're going to, I think this is the Donald Trump that is going to stay, because this is the Donald Trump that heard in the last 48 hours, "Dad, listen to me. You've gone with Bannon, you've tried all that, and it's good for your base, but that's not going to get anything done. You want to win, you got to start coming together. Bring them all together. Make them like you. Dad, that's what you do. Make them like you. Bring them together. Let's just move. You know, I know, Dad, what your supporters say, but this is really about love. This is really about love."
I will say this, too. One of the things that we know about Trump is he really likes positive media, and he got a lot of it out of that meeting yesterday. CNN was fawning over him for hours.
The New York Times was fawning over this. Bloomberg said, "Democrats, take this deal right now. Take it up. Take it."
They loved it.
They loved it.
They love this Trump. And he does respond to that sort of stuff.
Yes, he does.
So it'll be interesting to see. I am. This could be another 1 or 2 day thing, right? He comes out, he has this speech, and it's no big deal. It's theater, and it's over. So, I mean, you don't want to overstate it, but this is the type of stuff that the audience of Trump supporters, because there's a lot of people in the audience that were not big supporters and voted sort of, you know, with their nose plugged on Trump. But the people who are real supporters, this is the issue they laid
the supporters don't push back on him, if he doesn't get the negative response from his supporters, he will just go.
Mm-hmm.
He'll go. And you will be left in the dustbin of history.
Because as he stated, he does not have an opinion on this. He said, "My opinion is what you guys come up with."
Congress.
So whatever you come up with.
Not even Congress. The worst of the worst of Congress. All the people who are the flag bearers for the people we don't trust. That's who is at that table.
And if you've earned loyalty points from Donald Trump over this time, this is the time to use them.
Yep.
You know, make sure you spend them now.
Yep.
Because he needs to be influenced to say, "Hey, these things aren't the policies that we elected you for. This is not what we wanted." And he needs to hear that from you in the next couple of days.
888-727-BECK. Want to hear, have you changed? Do you accept it? Is this part of a John Roberts, this is what he's really doing on health care? What is this? 888-727-BECK.
Glenn Beck.
Let me go to Travis in Georgia. You voted for Donald Trump. How do you feel today, Travis?
Oh, I'm very upset, very angry. Feel like I've been taken for granted. It seemed like he just dismissed all of his supporters yesterday, and I'm genuinely just very upset about it. And I'm tired of defending him. You know, it's just every day is just something else. And when he was talking about comprehensive immigration reform is going to be phase two, and we'll start on that day two. Are you kidding me? I'm tired of trying to defend this.
Yeah, I can. I thought of that last night. That here are all these people who I don't think there are some people who are just blind supporters. There are others who are like, give the guy a chance. And man, I'm embarrassed by this, or I don't like this, but give him a chance. And I think he just slapped people across the face yesterday. I feel bad for those people who have been out defending him and have really wrestled with defending him. But you believed, and you know, maybe this is only one day. He changes, you know, with the wind. So maybe this is just one day. Travis, keep your chin up, brother. Thank you so much for your call. Take more calls. Want to hear your opinion. 888-727-BECK, 888-727-BECK is the phone number. Also on tonight's television program, we're going to talk a little bit about the economy and what is coming in the economic world. Some of my predictions and how I got there tonight at 5 o'clock.
Back. Mercury.